It's been a long, slow slog, but gay rights have come a long way.
At the age of 47, on his fourth try for public office, Harvey Milk was elected to San Francisco's Board of Supervisors.
Things get so much better.
It gets better.
It's going to get a lot better.
My name is Zach Walls. I'm a sixth-generation Iowan and an engineering student at the University of Iowa, and I was raised by two women.
And the Democrats delivered on the president's promises around repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
New York's Empire State Building was lit up in rainbow colors last night in honor of New York's historic vote legalizing same-sex marriage.
With President Obama's recent evolution on gay marriage, what was once an underground movement in some ways for gay rights legislatively, it's now front page news and could be part of the presidential election in the fall. Attorney and author Linda Hirschman joins us now. She chronicles the history of this movement in her new book, Victory, The Triumphant Gay Revolution. Thanks for joining us, Linda.
Thank you for having me.
And you're definitely making a statement with this book. I mean, the very title of it says that you're calling this almost a fait accompli, that we are on the road to seeing the full success of the gay social movement. And I wonder, is this book premature?
Well, you know, people have been asking me if it's premature for some time now, and each time they ask me, another victory occurs. So they said, should you call it victory? And then President Obama came out in support of gay marriage. And then they said, but should you call it victory? And then the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit struck down as unconstitutional the Anti-Gay Marriage Defense of Marriage Act. So I think I'm going to let events support my title. My point is obviously not that the battle is over. There are, you know, more states than not have very hostile law or no protective law at all, but that the crucial line has been crossed, that the tipping point has occurred, and that both in public opinion and in political legitimacy, the idea that gay and lesbian and to a lesser extent transgendered people should be accepted as full American citizens is now irreversible.
You know, I found it fascinating in your book. You go into really great detail about the beginning of the 20th century and even earlier days of what gay men and women went through to a certain extent, I assume, to give people context. So those who feel like the battle is still going on, like they still haven't achieved equality, they can see how far they've come.
Right. And I think that it's really important for movements to understand the enormous amount that they've accomplished and how they accomplished it. I think the how is actually more important than the what, because looking forward, we want not just the gay revolution, but progressive movements generally to learn from this successful movement how to do it. So I'm interested both in showing what happened and how far we've come, and also how to go forward. So I have Hirschman's three rules for a successful social movement that I derived from my 3 years of study of the gay revolution, which are concentrate on your own interests first and make alliance politics. In other words, don't dilute your movement. Second Hirschman rule is take the moral high ground, believe in the moral value of your cause, and don't just ask for tolerance, demand approval. And the third Hirschman rule is have weekly meetings.
You know, I found it fascinating also that, and not surprising since you're an attorney, that the legislative and legal ways in which the gay rights movement learned from both the feminist movement and the civil rights movement. But to a certain extent, we're talking about a very different group of people. These are not people who are separated out automatically by gender or by color. These are people who cross all socioeconomic lines. Did that help the gay movement?
Yes, I think it was a help. America is the hardest thing to change in America is the distribution of wealth. So because gay and lesbian people were scattered among all the different social classes, they were able to access wealth and deploy it to their advantage. In that sense, they're sort of like women. But gay men, especially closeted gay men, had access to the same pool of money that straight white men have, and that's the biggest amount of money in America. So to some extent, it was a help that they were scattered among all the social classes. The disadvantage that they had is that the thing that made them different was considered to be an act of character, a character flaw. So they couldn't say, well, it's just the color of our skin and not the content of our character, like Martin Luther King Jr. could say, because the very acts that made them different were considered by definition sinful and criminal and so forth.
And in fact, you detail this in your book as well, and we're speaking with Linda Hirschman, whose new book is called Victory, The Triumphant Gay Revolution. In fact, their very status sometimes classed them as insane. that their credibility was questioned because of their sexual lifestyle.
They were automatically crazy. I mean, think about making a social revolution with people who are, by definition, sinful, criminal, disloyal, and crazy. It was a real hard job. And people have started saying in the reviews that I, who am not gay, have written an adoring story of the gay revolution. And in some ways, it's right. It is an adoring story because I was so impressed by the political determination, strength, and accomplishments of this group of people who came from so far behind. It's Pride Month, and I think we all ought to celebrate the victory of the triumphant gay revolution.
And of course, Linda, it's success in the midst of tragedy. At the time of Stonewall, the great protest moment that happened here in New York City, the gay rights movement was extraordinarily radical. In some ways, a step beyond even the radicalism of the 60s. But by the time you get into the AIDS crisis and then emerge from the AIDS crisis, the gay rights movement is nearly a mainstream position. How important do you think was AIDS in focusing and reformulating the gay rights agenda in the United States?
I think AIDS was critical in two ways. First of all, because it forced a lot of people out who would never have come out. And secondly, because – three ways. And secondly, because it brought a huge amount of money into the movement. And thirdly, because the moral rectitude with which the gay community behaved during the AIDS crisis – cause people to start to treat them as if they were not immoral, as if they were moral actors, the way they took care of each other, walking each other's dogs and cleaning up after each other and caring for the sick themselves, gave them a lot of moral stature. And I think that those three things greatly strengthened the gay revolution. It's interesting that people see the moment after Stonewall as very radical, which it was, but the gay movement became relatively conservative relatively quickly. The Gay Liberation Front, which was the most radical moment, only lasted a little while, months, not a year, and was succeeded by a much more conservative group who patterned their organization on the American Revolution, not the Liberation Front or even the French Revolution. Yeah. They self-consciously parroted the language of the Declaration of Independence.
And in many ways, took their fight into the courtrooms and found ways in which to find laws to support them in places where they couldn't get just the general public to do so. I wonder if moving it into to the idea of legal language...
You know, it's interesting. There was a wave of unsuccessful litigation right after Stonewall in the 70s. They tried a bunch of things to get the government to stop firing them and to get the army to stop firing them. They litigated all of those and lost and lost and lost. The first big victory in the courts did... Well, it came with challenging the sodomy laws. It's interesting. The gay revolution actually followed the exact same pattern that they follow on marriage in challenging the sodomy laws. They went state by state to the state courts using the state constitutions and the state legislatures to stop prosecuting them for the very sexual act that defined them, to take that criminal piece away. They went to the courts to do that, just like they did with the marriage piece all those years later. So those were early court victories, 75.
Right.
That's early. That's only 6 years after Stonewall. But the great lawsuit is not the sodomy lawsuit. The great lawsuit is something called Romer versus Evans out of Colorado. And that was when the Supreme Court of the United States said that gay and lesbian citizens of Colorado were citizens of the United States and were entitled to participate in the political process. That was the first big victory for the movement.
So if Stonewall, the Stonewall riots in Greenwich, were the beginning of the gay rights movement, what's the end? What'll bookend the other side?
I think the beginning came in 1950 when a communist, Terry Hay, founded the Mattachine Society. Stonewall had all the press, but Stonewall was not the beginning. The beginning was the founding of the first consciously political organization. What's the end? That's an interesting question. There's a possible end should the Supreme Court of the United States take this First Circuit case and strike down as unconstitutional the Defense of Marriage Act. That would be a big bookend for the gay revolution. But I don't think it's going to end with a bang. Most social movements don't end with a bang. They end with a whimper, mostly
or
achieved.
Quietly.
Right,
that's
mostly
the good
achieved.
News.
Yeah, that
news.
Is the good news.
Yeah.
Linda Hirschman is author of Victory, the Triumphant Gay Revolution. Thank you so much for coming in.